everybody. Welcome to episode 498 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is the New Comics Wednesday episode for September 12th, 2018. A lot of books to talk about. I couldn't even talk about them all. I had to limit it to just nine. So many good books coming out this week. Because I have so many, I'm not going to go as in-depth. Obviously, we don't do spoilers on New Comics Wednesday, but we do give you some thoughts on these particular books. And then, of course, at the end, I'll do a rundown of some of the other books I think you might want to keep an eye out for when you head to your comic shop today. So because we have so many books, let's dive right in. The first book I'm going to talk about is Catwoman number 3. It's written by Joel Jones. We've got art from Joel Jones and Fernando Blanco, colors by Laura Allred and John Kalis. So the Catwoman title spins right out of Batman 50. Catwoman's off on her own. She seems to be investigating something, but it's very much a mystery at this time. We saw in Batman 50 that she had kind of an idea that there was something going on, something threatening Bruce, something that he didn't see, something he was unaware of. So I imagine that what she's looking for must have something to do with that, but on the surface, it doesn't seem to be involved at all. Not to spoil Batman 50, but, you know, we did see at the very end, the last page there, one of Batman's most famous foes, one of his most powerful foes, I guess you'd say, there with a bunch of other allies, and he seemed to be the one behind the wedding kind of falling apart in the first place. So again, not sure what Selina knows, but it does seem that she is searching for something. So it's a good setup. So far, the story has been intriguing. It's been moving a little slow. If I had any complaint about it so far, that would be it. I'm ready to not necessarily get answers, but just see the story move along a little faster. It seems to be a little bit of setup. We're getting a lot of the supporting characters. We're getting to understand them and their motivations, especially from the villain side of things. But we haven't gotten a lot of Selina or her motivations yet. So kind of waiting for that to kick in. But this issue did end on somewhat of a cliffhanger. And I am looking forward to seeing issue 4 kind of flesh that out further. It's something that can definitely shed some light and some insight into who Selina is as a character. As far as the art goes, you know, Joel Jones is a master, I think, at turning in very taut art. She has a certain feel and a tone. It's very stylish, and it certainly brings a sense of glamour to the Catwoman title, which I feel is very well suited for Selina and her reputation and kind of the way she holds herself. So Catwoman's been very good, and I do recommend it. It's probably my favorite Catwoman series that I've ever read. So, all right, moving on to the next book I want to talk about. It's Detective Comics number 988. This is starting a arc by James Robinson. And I'm not going to say who the villain is. I think that that's kind of been spoiled in some of the later solicits. But the hints and the clues in this issue don't give it away. At least I don't think it does. And so I'll preserve that mystery for you. It is interesting. You know, for a long time, it was always thought of the Batman title as the superhero title, the one where Batman would team up or there'd be a lot of action. And Detective was, as the title suggests, the detective book, the book where Batman was trying to solve mysteries, trying to solve crimes, a little more cerebral. It's gotten away from that over the past few years, I feel like. And it seems with this arc that DC's trying to get it back in that direction. So the issue starts off with a dead body. Seems to be just a mugging, and then Batman senses that there's more. He spots a few minor details that make him believe there's a lot more to the story. And as he starts following the clues, it becomes clear that there is a lot more to the story. So there is a villain reveal on the last page. It isn't the villain that I was vaguely referencing when I first started talking about the book. So I'm not sure how that ties in, and I'm not sure how that other villain ties in, who's more of a Batman Rogues Gallery type of villain. The reveal on the last page here has more to do with a villainous organization, but it's also an organization that I feel is well suited to go up against Batman. So we'll have to wait and see. And I did mention James Robinson is the writer. I don't know if I mentioned the artist. It's Steven Segovia, and the colors are by Ivan Plasencia. I will say that the art is absolutely spectacular. There are a couple of big splashes, and particularly on the title page, which is basically the skyline of Gotham. Absolutely incredible. I wouldn't say there's any ground broken here as far as panel layouts. I don't even really see any insets. It's all pretty standard. A lot of the boxes, the panels are widescreen, so it does give it somewhat of a kind of a movie feel. I don't want to say cinematic because it's not really that panoramic, but it is widescreen. I guess that's the best way to describe it. But Steven Segovia is a very good storyteller, so the panel-to-panel transitions are excellent. The rendering's done well. There's a lot of detail. The coloring by Ivan Plasencia is suitable. It's dark, it's moody, and it, like I said, it's very suitable for Gotham City, especially at night, as this whole issue takes place at night. The other thing about the book that I'll say is it did feel a little choppy to me. I don't know that the pacing is the best. I don't know if Robinson's ever written Batman before, but in places the story just felt a little stilted. I don't know that it was necessarily the dialogue, but it just felt, yeah, it just felt a little choppy in places. I'm not sure I can put my finger on what exactly it is, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just not used to seeing Batman talk so much, because there is a lot of dialogue in this book. So maybe that's what it was that made it feel just a little bit off to me. But I did enjoy the issue, the colors and the art especially. And I'm curious enough about this mystery to keep reading. Plus, I've said before that part of the reason I'm picking up Detective physically, because usually I just pick it up digitally, but it has Mark Brooks covers right now, all variant covers. So I'm buying it for those covers. So I might as well read it. Not that I haven't been reading Detective, but it's not one that has been at the top of my stack. I'll say that. But ever since Brian Edward Hill came on, I'm caught up. So if I can stay caught up and it stays compelling, I'll definitely be talking about it more on the podcast. It's kind of tough. You know, there's so much stuff to talk about, so many books, and I know there's a lot of podcasts out there that cover Batman. So I tend to kind of shy away from it just to try to give you guys some variety in the podcast you listen to. All right. Up next is Flash from Joshua Williamson. The art in this issue, issue 54, is by Christian Duce, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, D-U-C-E. And the colors are by Luis Guerrero. And this is the conclusion of the Grips of Strength storyline. So Flash has been a title that's really tying into what's going on in Justice League. And it makes sense, right? Because Joshua Williamson is one of the writers that collaborated a little bit on DC Metal with Scott and James Tynan, and then on the Justice League No Justice. And then, you know, he has the Justice League Odyssey title coming out soon. So he definitely is playing in that world and tying into the greater issues that are going on in the DC universe right now. You know, we saw in the it was hinted at in the Metal series, again in the No Justice series, and flat out stated in the Justice League title that there are 7 other forces in the world, you know, besides the Speed Force and the you know, emotional spectrum, if you will. So we've seen a few of them, and the Strength Force is one that's being explored here in Flash. Steel Force has been playing a big role in the Justice League title lately with the Totality storyline. So, but here Williamson explores the Strength Force. It's interesting what he does. He's using Trickster, the young version of the Trickster, which is an interesting character that I don't actually know that much about. But again, the strength of Joshua's storytelling has always been the relationships that Flash has with his supporting characters. And there's things going on with Barry and Iris right now that are really, I think, putting Barry on edge. And I don't know that he even realizes how much it's affecting him. But I love how much Williamson is building on what's come before. We had the Flash War storyline, and a lot of people thought, okay, that's going to be this big kind of blowout event, and it's going to change Flash forever or change the status quo or have all these repercussions. But whenever I talked to Josh, he talked about the fact that Flash War is really the first chapter in the next kind of narrative of Barry's life. And that's really proving to be the case, because they're like everything that Barry's dealing with right now, from Commander Cold to Wally being gone to Iris's memories, it's all connected, and it all goes back to things that happened in Flash War. So it's pretty tightly written. This isn't a book that you could necessarily jump on and understand what's going on right away. It definitely takes some context. So there is a little bit of a barrier to entry, but for those of us who've been reading Flash since Williamson took over, it's been very rewarding to see all these little tidbits and all these little clues that Josh has been laying here and there. He goes back and picks them up. So I will say that I'm very curious to see what this is all leading to, and to see how much the title Flash is going to tie in to kind of the climax of this story with these seven other forces. You know, I think we know about the Sage Force, the Strength Force, and the Still Force. But there's still four others that we don't know. The Ultraviolet Spectrum might be one as well, in which case we'd only have three left. But Flash has been really great. I'm not that familiar with Christian Ducey's art. I think I've seen it once or twice before. I think he's actually done an issue of Flash before. It's pretty detailed. So I did like that. He does have a little bit more of a textured style than I'm used to. So it's not my favorite art, but I would say that it's above average. And he does do a good job of transitioning from panel to panel. If there's one weak spot, I don't know that he draws action that well, which can particularly be a problem on the Flash because his art looks so static. There's not really a sense of movement. So when you're dealing with somebody like Flash, you kind of want that sense of movement. So definitely room for improvement there. But overall, I think the art's outstanding, definitely above average. All right, the next book I'm going to talk about is Hawkman number 4 from a writer Robert Venditti. We've got pencils by Brian Hitch, inks by Andrew Curry, Andy Owens, Daniel Enriquez, and colors by Jeremy Skipper. Now, you guys know that I'm a huge Robert Venditti fan, and him taking over Hawkman is probably the best thing that's ever happened to this character, because Venditti continues to bring in things from Hawkman's past, past lives, past continuity, past versions, and weave them into this story that he's telling. And it just brings a smile to my face every time I see another version of Hawkman and I see them interact. I see these different versions interact. It's awesome. And the fact that this version of Hawkman, Venditti's version of Hawkman, is so level-headed and so wise, that is definitely a kind of a different take on the character than we've seen in a while. And it makes so much more sense to me that somebody as long lived as him isn't going to be apt to go flying off the handle. You know, he's kind of been there, done that. So it makes total sense that he would be calm under fire. It makes total sense that he would be superior in aerial combat. This book is just so, so good. And the only complaint I have about it is each time I finish an issue, I immediately want the next one. It's one of those books where it's so good, and the narration, the scripting, the storytelling, as far as the art goes, it's all clicking so well that it's one of those titles that you read so fast that you immediately want more, right? Like, the creators are packing a lot of story into these issues, but it's so enthralling. You find yourself so engrossed in the story that before you know it, you're like, oh man, that was the last page? I want more. So it's amazing. This issue takes place mostly on Thanagar, which I feel like, Brian, nobody ever should draw Thanagar except Brian Hitch. He does a great job. I imagine it took him a while to draw this issue. There's so much detail in every page, from faces to giant hawk gods, explosions, buildings. Yeah, there's a lot of detail, gorgeous art. And, you know, I think there's always at least one or two lines in every Hawkman issue that I feel like Venditti throws in there just so he can make me laugh. He always gets a chuckle out of me. So very good dialogue as always from Venditti. And the last page, just like the last page of issue 3, which gave us, you know, two versions of Hawkman, bringing back an old friend, so to speak, this issue does something similar. And it has me just once again jonesing for the next issue, like, oh man, can I get my hands on issue 5 immediately, please? So incredible job from the entire creative team. I have to admit, I haven't paid any attention to the numbers on Hawkman. Probably should do that, because we really need this book to sell like hotcakes so that everybody will realize. It's one of those things, right? Like, once people hear a book is hot, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Other people want to jump on and see what all the buzz is about. Like, nobody wants to miss out, right? And Hawkman is one of those characters who I feel hasn't gotten the attention he probably deserves, especially for how long he's been around. And kind of what a cool basis he has. I mean, the guy can fly. He's a great fighter. He's been reincarnated and lived many lives. He's practically immortal. I mean, these are cool concepts. And so I really feel like a seminal Hawkman run, like a run where, you know, future fans of Hawkman can go, yeah, this Golden Age stuff is good and the Silver Age stuff and post-crisis, pre-crisis, whatever. But if I really want to understand the character and read like the best Hawkman run ever, I'm going to go pick up Hawkman 2018, Robert Venditti, Brian Hitch. Like, that's the level that we need to get it to. Because if we can get it up to that level and have that many people reading it, then we'll ensure that we keep getting great issues from great creators like Venditti and Brian Hitch. So definitely, definitely check out Hawkman. Next book I'll talk about is Plastic Man number 4. It's from writer Gail Simone, with art by Adriana Mello and colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick. This title continues to be a whole heck of a lot of fun. I love kind of the in-jokes and the goofiness, the way that Gail writes, especially the dialogue for Plastic Man. I wouldn't say it's slapstick, but he definitely has kind of a body sense of humor. Tends to be a little dirty, and I feel like Simone really gets Plastic Man. I think too often times people try to play him kind of straight, and it doesn't work. You know, you gotta write Plastic Man like he's not quite all there, right? Like, the chemicals didn't just affect his body and make it all weird and rubbery, but it affected his brain too. And I'm not saying he's dumb or mentally challenged or anything. I'm just saying he just he sees things a little skewed, right? He sees things a little differently than the rest of us do. So this book's been a whole lot of fun, and I don't know where DC found Adriana Mello, but she is the absolute perfect artist to draw Plastic Man. She handles the zany shape-shifting really, really well. It can't be easy to draw a guy that can change his anatomy at will and, you know, stretch things out or whatever, and still make it look relatively realistic. But she does a really, really good job. And also the colors by Kelly Fitzpatrick. It's very much a primary color book, which, again, just helps to give it that old school comic booky feel. So this has been a really great title. I think there's one or two more issues to go. I think it's 5 or 6 issues. So if you haven't been checking it out, I really recommend it. I'd really like this title to continue beyond its initial 5 or 6 issues. 6 issues is what it's supposed to be. So we'll see. That's another one I haven't heard sales numbers on. I should look into that as well. All right. The next book I'm going to talk about is Supergirl number 22, written by Mark Andraco. We've got pencils by Kevin McGuire, inks by Sean Parsons, and colors by FCO Plasencia. I'll talk about the art first. Issue 21 of Supergirl, I talked about how amazing the art was from Kevin McGuire. Mandy didn't like the art. Honestly, I think he's insane. If anything, the art in this issue got even better. And once again, I'll reiterate that nobody should ever ink Kevin McGuire's pencils other than Sean Parsons. They're just a match made in heaven. And the art is clean, a lot of detail, really detailed lines, great background. The colors by FCO Plasencia are relatively primary, and it suits the story that is being told here. Also, we get to see Supergirl in one of her different costumes for the first time, and she looks awesome. But beyond that, the story that Andraco's telling, there is a lot of action. A lot happens in this issue. It moves the story along really quickly. We get to see a lot of Rogol Zar's axe, and we get to see a lot of Crypto, and we get to see a lot of Green Lanterns. So when you put Rogol Zar's axe, you put Green Lanterns, you put Crypto, you put Supergirl, I mean, it's very nearly the perfect comic. And I also love the way Andraco writes or scripts the book, because he's giving us both what Supergirl says out loud as well as what she's not saying, what she's thinking but not saying. And it matters because she's talking to supposed allies, right? So even though she is out there trying to solve the mystery, she's not necessarily willing to share everything she knows. And I get the feeling that part of it is that she doesn't want anyone to try to talk her out of it or stop her from getting her revenge. She's very much focused on that right now. So really, really great book. Definitely recommend Supergirl 22. All right. Next book I'm going to mention is not a DC book. It's Low Life's number 4 from Brian Buccellato. And this is the end of volume 1. Now, when I finished 3 and I saw To Be Concluded, I was like, oh man, he's going to have a lot to wrap up in issue 4. Isn't it going to be like a double size? But I was looking forward to seeing a resolution. And it's not that. This is just the end of the first volume, which I'm fine with because, again, I don't want it to be rushed. But I haven't heard very many people talking about this book. And honestly, that is a real shame because this is honestly, when I finished reading issue 4, I felt like, you know what this is? This is a kind of has the tone, and it reminded me of Sons of Anarchy, the first season, when the story's fast-paced and things are happening quickly. The protagonist, you know, the guy you root for, isn't necessarily a good guy. He's not necessarily a bad guy either. He's kind of walking that gray line, kind of like Jack Steller in Sons of Anarchy, right? Like technically he's broken the law here or there, but he's still the one that you root for, and you think like deep down he's a really good guy. And kind of the violence and the things that are going on and the mystery of it all. So I definitely got a feel for that first season of Sons of Anarchy. And I would think that if you're a fan of that first season or a fan of Sons of Anarchy in general, this is the kind of comic you're going to love. Kind of crime and gritty and a lot of violence and people beating the crap out of each other. So it's an incredible book. I actually had a chance to talk to Brian Buccioletto at Long Beach Comic Con last weekend, and I'll be playing that for you on the Long Beach wrap-up episode that'll be out on Friday, so stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, get out there and pick up Low Lives, because man, this book has it's just incredible. You know, if you like things like Sons of Anarchy, Heat, just stories about bad guys and worse guys, you know, it's like living on the streets, trying to make ends meet, flying by the seat of your pants, bad guys trying to, you know, rip each other off and stay ahead of the game, that kind of thing. It has a certain feel and a certain tone. And I think right from the first issue, Brian was able to nail it. So really, really impressed with this this title. I highly recommend it. And I really hope it's not too long of a break before Volume 2 starts, because I must have answers. This book is incredible. And I should also mention that the art by Alexis Centenac is really great as well. He's a French artist, and I don't even know how much English he speaks, but Brian and Alexis have a really good thing going with this book, because it's not the most detailed art, but the storytelling and the layout sense that Alexis has is really, really good. So really enjoying this book. And also Alexis does the colors, and the color work is probably even better than his line work and his rendering. His color work is outstanding. It really helps set the mood and the tone for the story. So, all right, up next, I'm going to talk about Cemetery Beach, number one. This is from writer Warren Ellis with art by Jason Howard. And it's basically about a guy from our Earth who goes to a colony, and I don't know if it's another dimension or another planet that we established a long time ago. There's no longer communication, and this guy's sent as kind of a, I don't want to say a spy, but just to kind of recon and see what's going on out there. And he gets captured, and he breaks out and frees one of his fellow prisoners, and we don't even know what she's in for, but she, I mean, she's a prisoner of this like fascist regime, right? So maybe there's nothing wrong with her, but at the same time, maybe she deserved to be there. And that's all we know. It's a very, very fast-paced first issue. A lot of action. It was Warren Ellis, so I decided, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and check it out. It was good. The art by Jason Howard is different. There are times when he gets super detailed, other times where it's more of kind of an impressionist feel. And the colors, it is a pretty muted color palette, but it does suit the mood of the story that these two creators are trying to tell. So I was really impressed with it. Having read the solicit, I was mildly interested in checking it out. After having read the first issue, I'm definitely in for issue two. Bring it on. It was super, super cool. Could almost think of it like The Prisoner, if you like the old Prisoner TV show with Patrick McGoohan, because this world where our hero escapes from the detention center, I guess you'd say, it's got its own set of rules, right? Like there's flying machines and advanced technology in a way, but it does seem kind of run down also. So it's definitely quirky and intriguing, and I can't wait to see where it goes. All right, the last book I'm going to talk about is the second issue of Crowded from writer Christopher Sabella, pencils by Rose Stein, inks by Ted Brandt, and colors by Triona Farrell. Much like the first issue, second issue, I feel like, man, you get so much comic for your comic buying dollar. It just... And I don't want to make it sound like, oh my God, is this book ever going to end? But I just feel like there's so many books that you read and you're done in 5 minutes or less sometimes. This is not like that, but it also didn't feel like giant dialogue dumps, right? It was very well paced, very well scripted. I will say that the girl that has the Reaper campaign opened up on her is not, she's not very endearing. It seems like she's a hard person to like. You know what I mean? And you can easily understand, although she can't understand why anybody would want her dead, from the way she acts, it's very easy to see people contributing to a campaign to want her dead. And I haven't even, I mean, I've read two issues so far. It's been nonstop action, super fast paced, snappy dialogue, great scripting, awesome art, beautiful colors, like very nearly a perfect comic. And I haven't even talked about the like moral implications of what this book is, being able to crowdfund and crowdsource hits, the contracts on people. And we get a big explanation of what the Reaper is, the Reaper platform is in this issue from this group of comic book loving teenagers, I guess you'd say. And again, they're kind of explaining and answering a lot of the questions that maybe some people have where they go, oh, this could never really happen. As much as social media is a thing nowadays, this is too far-fetched. The explanation they give and the timeline makes it seem very possible, all too possible, actually, for this to go down. But it's a great title. It's from Image, Crowded Number 2. And this one I have heard a lot of buzz about, so I don't know if issue one, if you can even track one down now, but you definitely need to let your retailer know that you want all the Crowded going forward, because the story is just a whole heck of a lot of fun. And great art from Rose Stein and Ted Brandt, and the colors by Triona Farrell are excellent as well. So really digging this title. It's a lot of fun. And another one of those where I'm just about as soon as I'm done, I'm like, oh man, stop ending on cliffhangers, because it makes me want the next issue immediately. So, all right, let me go ahead and give a rundown of some of the other titles that you might be interested in checking out today. From Aftershock, we have Hot Lunch Special Number 2, Moth and Whisper Number 1, and Volition Number 2. So if you listen to this last week's Aftershock Monday episode, you would have heard a very in-depth and interesting conversation with Ted Anderson and Jen Hickman, the creative team behind Moth and Whisper. So I hope that interview inspired you to go and pick up issue one. It's really, really good. Hot Lunch Special Number 2 and Volition Number 2 I'll be talking about on next week's Aftershock Monday episode, I should say. So look for that in a little less than a week. From DC, I talked about a lot of the DC books that were coming out. There were so many good ones. But I will also mention that House of Whispers Number 1 came out. That's another one of the titles from kind of the relaunch of the Sandman universe from Vertigo. We've also got Immortal Men Number 6 from James Tynan that wraps up that storyline. We've got Suicide Squad Number 46 and Wonder Woman Number 54. And that one is by Steve Orlando. Okay, over at IDW, latest issue of G.I. Joe, G.I. Joe Real American Hero Number 256 comes out today. From Image, in addition to the books I mentioned, we've got Farmhand Number 3. We've got 1975 Number 1, and that's set in the in New York in 1975. And I say 1975, but it's Roman numerals 1975. And it's from Joe Casey, and it's about a taxi driver, and she wields like a mystical tire iron and fights off monsters. So if monster fighting is what's up your alley, you may want to check that out. Oblivion Song by Robert Kirkman and Roberto De Felici is up to number 7. I keep threatening to talk about that book on the show. I just haven't done it yet. That's a really, really great book. There's a lot to dig in there. Over at Lionforge, we've got Voltron Defender Volume 3, Number 3. From Marvel, we've got the latest issue of Amazing Spider-Man, which is Number 5. We've got the latest issue of Daredevil, which is 608, from Charles Soule. Fantastic Four, Issue 2, which is supposed to actually feature the return of Reed and Sue. So looking forward to that. The first issue of Iceman's latest series, I think it's a miniseries, 5 issues. Number 1 is out today. The next chapter in the Infinity Wars is out today as well. That's issue number 3. And then on the Star Wars side of things, from Charles Soule, we have Star Wars Darth Vader number 21, continuing the Fortress Vader series. And the last thing I'll mention from Marvel is X-23 number 4. Laura Kinney versus the Cuckoos. I can't wait for the next chapter of that. So I'll probably be talking about that maybe on this next upcoming Marvel Monday episode. And the last thing I'll mention from Valiant, we've got Ninja K number 11, which features Ninjak trying to track down Gilead's body, the Eternal Warrior, who's currently possessed by the Dying One. So I'll probably be talking about that on this coming Sunday's Valiant Sunday. Oh, one more thing I should mention is Wasted Space number 5 from Vault Comics from writer Michael Morisi. That's a must read. And I think every single issue sold out. So I want to remind everybody that if you do want to read that story, which is almost a down and dirty, gritty, what if Elseworlds reimagining of a Star Wars story, like if Luke Skywalker, you know, Chosen One kind of went off the rails and then went and hid out. Yeah, it's that's a really, really great title. So as I said, just about every issue or every single issue has sold out at Diamond. So if you want to check it out, be sure and let your retailer know that you want the trade paperback that's available for order right now that collects the entire series. All right, I think that's going to do it for this episode of New Comics Wednesday. Thank you for joining, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Next show I'll be at is Comic-Con LA, coming up the last weekend in October, so hope to see you there. And once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.